This is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Yan Pei. We're going to be discussing the concept of the Alt Center. Yan, it's great talking to you.
Thank you. It's great talking to you, too.
And I'm also joined here with my co-host, Sam Kevorkian.
Hello.
Yan, you've been advocating the concept of alt-centrism for quite some time. Can you tell us about your background and how long have you been advocating this?
That's the thing. My background. I'm an artist and a philosopher, and like I studied philosophy. I studied theology, I studied economics, and I studied arts as well. Studied economics because a man got to live. I wanted to understand the society we live in, so I went into all those studies during my previous years. And I have been, in fact, advocating for freedom of speech for a long time. And right now, due to the situation, the political situation, when the right and the left are becoming more and more radicalized to the point that now they started going at each other, like the good old times that nobody wants back except the extreme right and the extreme left. So I thought, you know what, if I am to get a position in this situation now, I'll remain in the center. Because I really don't want to be a part of the extremes, because it always goes wrong, at least as I see it. It's my personal opinion. Everybody has one, right? So I started pushing for that in the internet. And the several names, of course, because I'm not stupid, but after I felt confident enough, there's a point when the whole doxing thing started to come. I thought, okay, you know what? What do I do? Do I keep on playing hard to get, or do I just come up with my real name? And I came up with my real name. I thought about the things I have done previously, the exhibitions that I've been part of, the biennials with my real name. I thought, okay, I kind of have something to fall back on. So I noticed that in Facebook, there was no alt-center community. At least I didn't see any. So I thought, oh, you know what? I'm going to create an alt-center community. And then I created a second one just in case something happened to the first one. So I did that second one. And the last time I checked, suddenly there were several communities, alt-center communities, and I thought it was great. You know, that's the spirit. That's how it should go. Because the alt-center shouldn't be about leadership or who came first or second or last or whatever. It should be just like the recent movement, something like Gamergate, without leadership. You understand? And that's the kind of stuff I have been pushing the last 20 years in the web. Like, I got problems because of that in the past. I lost jobs, I had to leave education, but it's worth it, you know, because before it was even harder than it is today to talk about certain things. But people like me that saw what was going on, and am I making any sense here with with what you people want to hear?
Yeah, you're talking about the issue of a censorship and being politically non-aligned.
Exactly.
With the issue of censorship, you're talking about it from a European context where there's actual speech laws where some people are getting fined or even going to jail for certain speech. In the United States, there is freedom of speech in a legal sense. But it's still, there's not freedom of speech in the sense where a lot of people lose their jobs and they become economically destroyed. So
exactly.
There's not true free speech here either.
It's horrifying Think about that. You said a word, right? Or a sentence, or a couple of words in the wrong context. Sure, perhaps it's even like something that people would rather avoid, right? Like, oh my God, why did you say that? You know, but that's it, a couple of words. And people, somehow, they feel entitled to mingle in your life and destroy you. Like, because if you get fired, right, like they call like your work, they write to your work to get you fired. Even if there is no law, you are being punished, like getting fired, getting kicked out of university. That's terrifying. People like to throw this term around in the internet, but it's pretty fitting. It's Orwellian. Think of, like, it's newspeak, and you can't say words. You're not allowed. And this is not just an European problem. Like, I was living in South America. I was living in Brazil for some time. And there, they made a dictionary, like, about that thick, of words that you cannot say. If you say one of those words, even if it is in context, it doesn't matter. The words are forbidden. So it seems that it's a global push towards forbidden words, towards words you cannot say, because there will be consequences. Like in Brazil, for instance, they are arresting people for saying those words. And I don't know, like, I know some of the words, I haven't read through, but I'm pretty sure that they're words that just because they, oh yes, for instance, ape or drunk, you cannot say drunk without the possibility of getting into legal trouble. And this was because one of the previous presidents, it all started with Lula, that president in Brazil, he used to drink a lot. So a journalist made an interview with him, and he noticed that Lula was completely bruised, like he was completely drunk, to the point that he became, like, the things he was saying were just not making sense. So the journalist, I believe it was an English journalist, he typed, like, he in his interview, he concluded, like, the man was a drunken bolt, you know, and he wrote that. And this president didn't like it. So what did the president do? He made this dictionary of words you cannot say. And amongst them, there's like the word drunk. You cannot say drunken bolt. That can get you in jail in Brazil. And this kind of stuff got me fired up because it's absurd. If you cannot criticize, if you cannot discuss a topic without using certain words, you cannot really reach an agreement. You cannot reach an understanding of anything.
I've heard a lot of people on the left say that they talk about certain speech is hate speech or ignorant. But thing is, if a speech is, say, if someone makes an ignorant comment, then it should be a learning experience to learn from. If it is a bad comment, then people can learn from that and then have an intellectual discussion and figuring out what the right approach is. But if you censor a comment, then that just, I mean, that sets a very dangerous precedent and you're not able to have discussions. And then what happens is people go into these echo chambers that you see on both the far right and the far left, where people just want to talk to people who think in a very, and think in the same way they do, and there's no progress.
Yes, mm-hmm. And to add to that, it's sexual harassment laws fall within that same category because sexual harassment law is, in its very definition, is just bad game. It's just like hitting a girl with bad game. It's like approaching women and failing at it. That's what sexual harassment is. It's like, how are you supposed to meet women? if, like, it's already given that most girls don't like you, so you're going to be talking to a lot of girls who don't like you if you want to meet any girls.
Yes, that's well put. That's another aspect that I have been noticing. Like, the alt center currently, like, this will go on. This will further develop. But currently, it's an attempt of people trying to maintain a balance, a common sense. What I've seen, that's the impression I have, trying to say, no, wait a minute. Let's calm down. Let's think about what is being said. Let's really discuss topics. Let's not take it to the extremes. That's the impression that I had, you know. And I mention a lot the freedom of speech thing because I believe, because I saw the development, that this is what generated the current alt center. And the name alt center also because it doesn't wish to be stagnant or something monolithic like the center, right? It wants at the same time to be like alternative. The whole alt thing should mean alternative to the mainstream, to the, so it's something else, something more flexible than this monolithic right, left, center. Like the alt-right was alternative. It was lighter. It was not, but it was taken over because the media did exactly what they did to the skinhead movement of the 70s. That used to be a bunch of Jamaican kids together with British kids, suburban kids, who were listening to ska. Like, they were listening to Jamaican music. They were definitely not racists. But at this time, the Pakistanese prostitution rings started kicking in, the grooming gangs, the organized crime that was coming from Pakistan and all that. They started grooming the girlfriends of those, both the Jamaican and the British kids. And those kids, the skinheads, they started fighting back against those Pakistanis. And then the media, for the sake of, I don't know, entertainment or what we now call clickbait attention, they decided to attack the skinhead movement, calling them racist and all those horrible things that we know by now that it's just words that they just throw because everybody pays attention. Who? And it turned to be because the media pumped up this image, they built this evil image, it started to attract all those, I call crazy. You have to be crazy to push for a movement that only survived around 20 years and it failed miserably. I mean, but those are my personal views. But they started to attract all those crazy individuals into the skinhead movement, and they did it the same. They did it again with the alt-right that used to be people like Rams Paul, like people who like to joke, who like to troll, who like to take it lighter than they are conservatives, but they like to take it easy with things. And they were kicked out. Like, I watched the episode that Rans Paul say, oh, I'm not alt-right anymore. I have nothing to do with those guys. You know, like, it was run over, taken over by the neo-Nazis. Like, as far as I know, I'm not into it so much, so if you happen to know more about it, but as far as I know, this is what happened with the alt-right. It was taken over by extremists. It was going to be something more intellectual, something more, let's debate, let's talk through, let's make fun of the left. And it was just because of the media pumping, oh, they're neo-Nazis, they're terrible people, horrible, down with them, they are fascists. So all the fascists, fascists, oh, I'm fascist, let's go there. And then suddenly it was all those fascists taking over, you know, like, I never met them, those guys. I don't have any issues with them because I never met them. I don't know what they're up to, and I don't care. I'm interested in other stuff. But I saw that happen. So before, you know, something of the sort, because I saw there was a point when the old center started pumping, like a couple of months ago, some neo-Nazis started trying to talk with me and say, ooh, I believe, they started with that speech, I think that Nazism is more like center. We are not really right. We are not. We are definitely not left, although they are left. But that's a long story. Try to talk them through it. It's funny to see. I think we are more like center. So they already start positioning themselves. And I just jumped in and said, no. Wait a minute. You wanted to be right. You don't want to be called left already. So you don't want to be called left despite the fact you are socialists. And so there you are. You took over the alt-right. It's yours. It's all yours. Now you're right. You like to be called right-wing. Congratulations. So stay there. You know, you have your poll. You fought for it. Keep it. Don't come in the center. You are not center. You're definitely not center. That's when I stepped in. And you can step in. And that's the problem. Like, perhaps because I have been jaded. Like, over 20 years, I've been freedom of speech all the fucking time. Can I say fucking?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So I know, like, after you've been beaten a lot, you start beating back. You start realizing, hey, what if I just, you know, cut through, I just talk with them like I feel like, you know, cut the bullshit, trying to fool of fingers, just tell them, no, sir, you're...
With this whole concept of an alt-center, you made the point on your Facebook group that you say it's basically non-aligned. The question is, like, should there be definitions of what an alt-center is? And should there be some kind of a core political platform? It seems to be basically people who are disaffected with the far left and the far right, but at the same time, they're also skeptical of the establishment. That's a kind of a more of a broad or vague definition. Do you think there needs to be more specific, concrete definitions of what an alt-center should be?
Well, because it's a new movement, I think it's defining itself. And I love that. I love that it defines itself. And you are completely right in what you are saying. And this is why I decided to work on that. Because I think it's more important right now to clarify what the alt-center is not, right? And you said it pretty well. It's non-aligned. And it's really people who are tired of being pushed around by both the radical left and the radical right, and they just, you know, somebody has to pay for the bill. You know, the silent majority, the majority of people don't want to be dragged into those conflicts, political conflicts. And I think it's fine that they are defining themselves. I'm absolutely fine with it. I think it's great. It's a great moment. I believe we are living, historically speaking, as crazy as it might sound, a kind of political crossroads of humanity. This is defining the whole structure of the age of information that we are living. You know, because we are not living in the, like, and this is one of the things that I constantly clash with the left, is that they are living in the past. You know, like, they're defending an ideology that has been created around 200 years ago, you know, in the 18th century, when doctors were curing people with leashes, when the lights in the streets were lit by kerosene. You know, like, we have gone so far from that, when there was proletarian in the sense of the word. Because many people throw that word around, you know, what is a proletarian? It's an absolutely unskilled labor. Like, it's people who probably cannot read or write. You understand? Like, they are talking about those realities that in the Occident at least don't exist anymore. like the proletarian became the middle class. The crown prince of Denmark has married an Australian girl who used to be a bartender, but apparently studied art. But the story that I know back from the day is that she was a bartender. You know, like, times have changed. Like, he drives a Christiania bike with his kids to deliver his kids to a public school in Denmark. The crown prince, you understand? And it was not thanks to socialism that this happened. It was thanks to the social development, thanks to technology, thanks to the Ford principle. But don't you dare say that, like, that it was Ford who created the 8-hour work and the weekend, because then his employees could work in car, like, could enjoy the cars that they were producing. And then the other big business say, man, this is a good idea. We can sell more products. Like, this is what actually kickstarted the whole freedom in labor that we have today. And not Marx or Engels, despite the fact that Engels inherited a farm from his daddy, you know, and was paying for Marx's show. He didn't create those laws. But, you know, I try to talk with the left about those things, say, look, those are values. Sure, perhaps at that point it might even have been relevant somehow. Like, it was definitely needed some change in Russia, because the way that, you know, the proletarian proper were treated in Russia, like the peasants, it was horrifying. You know, so like in China as well, it's a feudal system, you know, people were really oppressed. So this is why communism was successful in those places, because in the lack of things, what the hell, right? I mean, when people don't have anything anymore to lose, so they'll get anything. But it doesn't work in what is called capitalistic societies, you know. But that's a long story. We're not here to talk about that. But so people can get the point also, why alt center, you know, why not left? Why not just a bit more to the left? We tried that, you know, it was a catastrophe. So that's also one of the reasons. Like, I've been raised in the left. Like, my parents were artists, you know, I lived the 70s, you know, hippies all over the place. Like, and it was wonderful. I actually miss those days, in the sense of the liberty that we had. As crazy as it might sound, we were free then. We could say anything, we could do anything, you know. To say I love you to a woman was something beautiful. It was for real. You understand? It was beautiful to express your feelings, how you felt about a woman, to invite a girl out to something more intimate was truly a sign of affection and not of repulse, of disgust, as it is today.
Your point is, a lot of these really nasty elements of what's a lot of people are calling the regressive left, you didn't notice them back in the 70s, which was right after the kind of 60s counterculture. You see them as a more recent development.
Yes, and may I say that the hippies, like, we were, like, we were, because my father made sure that I read a lot, you know, so I could question authority. But they made fun of the Marxists. The hippies were not really into that kind of stuff. You understand? They were not radical. Sure, I'm pretty sure they were radical here, radical there, but we were in touch with everybody. Of course, the hippies attracted a lot of socialists. There's no doubt about it. I remember the father of one of my first girlfriends, he was allegedly a guerrilla, a Russian guerrilla, although he fainted at the sight of blood, and it was the funniest thing. But you understand, like, those crazy people, those funny people, those people who wanted to change the world, you know, and read all the time, intellectualized, you know, even if they didn't understand half of it, but the other half that they understood was worth it.
A lot of these modern day SJW types, they have more in common with, like, religious fundamentalists than the original left.
Oh, yes, and I blame the universities today, the way that the universities, and now I'm going to pull a little the ear of the capitalists, you know, because the universities became a cash cow. It became what could be a word? You know, a money-making machine. Oh, everyone is welcome. Yeah, we have courses of everything here. Oh, you want to be a feminist? We have courses in feminism as well. Look, take some loans, spend your money here. Oh, you're spending a lot of money. Oh, but you feel bad about the things that people are saying because it doesn't make sense with what you are being indoctrinated and learning from this communist course. And you feel in shock and awe because probably your IQ, and I'm not making fun of simple people. Simple people have simple solutions. I respect them way more than I respect a lot of those, you know, like snobbish intellectuals. But they are exploiting simple people, people with a low IQ are being accepted currently in academia. And this is generating a problem because how can, like, I have done some tests, if that is even relevant. And I remember how hard, even in theology, that was easy peasy in comparison to certain things. But we had to learn classical Greek and the whole grammar structure of classical Greek, and the students sat down together, we together, breaking our heads to finally understand. When we understood the structure of the grammar of classical Greek and of Latin and all, our heads kind of, I don't know if you ever had that feeling in academia, your head just bursts and you look around and everybody has that same stone face that they finally understood, and then everybody would just disappear because now we didn't need to study that much because we understood finally the stuff. I don't believe that those people have those moments, if you understand what I mean. So they stick to what the teachers are telling, and some of
you're saying just going kind of for the regimentary process of just getting a diploma rather than valuing the intellectual process just to enlighten oneself. Is that what you're primarily getting at?
Exactly. When I joined academia, my view was finally I have a place with people who have proven to be worthy due to their, you know, level of grades and all that, to be intellectually worthy to be here so I can finally expose my ideas, have my ideas debated, have them smashed, kill my darlings, you know, smash other people's ideas. And suddenly I realized that academia was not that. It was just a continuation of high school.
Yeah, I've noticed the same thing. Like, when I was going to the university, there was a lot of debates going on. I was like a center-right libertarian, socially liberal back then, and I was having debates all the time with leftists and socialists about the free market, and like I've made some good arguments in my papers, and like I've even had a teacher who was a literal communist, and she graded my papers fairly, even though she disagreed with me. And
oh, some of them are beautiful.
Yeah,
some of them are real intellectuals.
Yeah,
this I'm not questioning the authenticity of the people, but the ideas are broken. But yeah.
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is that this was about seven or eight years ago. So academia has changed a lot since then based on what I've heard. You know, it's very totalitarian now. It's authoritarian. It's simply just listen to what I say and believe every word. Don't question it. It's pretty much every single like stereotype that they have about religion and the church. They are fulfilling it themselves.
Yeah. That's interesting you brought up the whole thing with academia, because with my whole political transformation, I started out kind of being more of a reactionary, kind of taking like right-wing views as a just a kind of a reaction to the extreme politically correct climate in academia. But at the same time, I grew up in the Bush era, and I saw the Republican Party as being the party of George Bush. But I didn't really want to be, I saw liberals as being a lot of phonies. So part of me took a sort of a reactionary position. But at the core, I sort of felt there was a need for some kind of alternative. And we do need an alternative to the left and the right. But not just the left and the right, but this kind of this sort of establishment center, which you see with politicians ranging from the Democratic establishment, politicians like Hillary Clinton, to these so-called moderate Republican types that are put out as well. I think the alternative center can't just be against and a rejection of the left and the right, but it also has to differentiate itself from the establishment center. I mean, I've been promoting this for quite some time. Now, the alt-center is a kind of new term, but I was using the term radical center, and I did some podcast stuff about 2 years ago about the radical center. But I've heard all these establishment types now are calling themselves a radical centrist, and I think you can be on a line, but that's kind of the question, like, should there be a specific political definitions on political stances on core issues?
Yes, that's something to consider, and but you see, that's exactly that, like the point with the old center, because we got tired of radicalism, so we ended up being pushed because we can think a little further. Perhaps we ended up being pushed more to the center eventually. I think to make it clear, like if we are to take a stand to, because at some point, believe me, it's going to be necessary. The right and the left are at it again. And, you know, it has always been either one side wins and start killing everybody or the other side wins and start killing everybody. So today, thanks to the age of information, we are able to intercept the correspondence and do something about it before it reaches where it should, and then stop the more absurd, the more radical, the more criminal actions of those people. And that's actually when I decided to come out of the woodwork and say, you know what, I'm using my real name, because now I can see it's not only me or somebody that I don't know somewhere that are pushing for it. Now, there's a lot of people that are pushing for it, a lot of people, and we can stop it. Because after Gamergate, I saw how many people are actually fed up, regardless of what people believe Gamergate is today. You know, it's irrelevant. The point is, people were finally standing up and doing something about it. Like Gawker, you know, sure, it was Hulk Hogan's lawsuit that gave them the mercy shot. But I remember the posts of the Gawker CEOs there complaining that they were losing millions in publicity or whatever was it. I remember all this. And I thought, man, this is brilliant. It's finally working. It's alive. You know, the struggle, the pushback is starting. So if we are to define the alt-center, it should be to make sure that elements from the radical left or the radical right do not enter the center. You understand what I mean?
Yeah, the radical left and the radical right. But then you get into a lot of different issues, the different factions of the left and the different factions of the right. So take the left. there is the sort of extreme SJW culture, extreme political correctness. That's one factor. Then there's mm-hmm. people who are primarily economic leftist, ranging from there's sort of democratic socialism, which is what Bernie Sanders advocates and what pretty much a lot of European countries have. And then there's like full-on communist. And then on the right, you have all these different factions. You have like the business corporate right, which basically wants taxes as low as possible on the rich, and they want to get rid of environmental regulation. Then you have the religious right, which it was pretty big in the United States, but I don't think their influence is not as strong as it was during, say, the Bush era or previous to that. Mm-hmm. And then there is the alt-right. And then within the alt-right, you have different factions. As you said, as you were saying earlier, within the alt-right, you have sort of like neo-Nazis and skinheads. You have some people who are called this sort of they're called the alt-right, and they're basically conservatives who are just fed up with political correctness. And then there's some people who are kind of loosely associated with the alt-right who are maybe more centrist, but they're maybe fed up with political correctness, or they think immigration levels are way too high. And then the third group is probably where I'm closest to. And some people are calling it the left wing of the alt-right or the alt-center. But what are your thoughts on all those different factions of the left and the right, and even within a group like, say, the alt-right? Then the alt-left is a whole other group, which mm-hmm. is – the alt-left is a kind of confusing concept, because that came about – originally the alt-left was coined by this blogger named Robert Lindsay, who was basically leftist who were – against SJW culture, political correctness, and also against the neoliberal establishment of the left. But then the term alt-left kind of became co-opted by just sort of the radical leftists.
Yeah, and that's exactly the problem. The radicals always take over. Why? How? How do they manage to take over? Whatever they want, they just jump in and take it. You know, there is no stopping them. Why? Because nobody stops them. Nobody say, no, you're not welcome here. You already have your space. You have your space. You fought for your space. You stay there. We formed this new space to get away from people like you. Don't get it wrong. I don't have anything against you. But I would rather be with other people. So this is why I built this house. Now you cannot smash the door and come in and claim it's your house and then burn it down and then say it's my fault. You know, we just need to keep the radical elements out. You understand what I mean? If we do that, because I have been following, I remember the first forums I was a moderator of that had those elements. In that case, it was radical left who simply took over. And I tried to stop them, and it was a huge fight. And people were like, they were demanding to vote for new moderate. When they saw that I presented opposition, they started demanding elections for new moderators. So I was elected again. And then I was elected again. And then I was elected again. And then they started doxing the people who were voting for me. They found out who they were. They found out their real names. And they started posting it in the forums. And this is how the radicals always operate. And I've seen it, 10 years ago already, this happening. So then we had, after that, a couple of years after, we had the whole Occupy movement that I was starting to get involved to kind of, you know, help up. But then suddenly those crazy people that like to dress as clowns to protest while they are beating people up, but dressed as clowns, you know, because they're supposed to be nice and funny while they're doing really nasty stuff to people around them, you know, shitting in the streets, going animal. around and banging things in the ears of people around. And then I saw the takeover of the Occupy movement. Suddenly, it was just a bunch of crazy lunatics controlling the movement. Not everybody. I'm not insulting half of the people that were in the movement of the Occupy thing. That could have been a great thing. We could have put, for instance, Wall Street to question, right? I mean, come on, what's going on there with all those bailouts and all the stuff? No, it turned out to be another, forgive me the term, shitfest, you know, like. And I saw this happening, and then I saw finally the Gamergate stuff, that suddenly there were feminists in the thing, telling everybody what they should do and shouldn't do, and accusing people of the most heinous things. I mean, they were accusing innocent people of rape and God knows what, you know, and racism. And then that poor black kid dared to make the Not Your Shield. Anyone remember that? The Not Your Shield? And they got him fired, I believe. They got the kid fired, regardless of the fact that he was black and he was saying, hey, stop using minority. See, I'm a minority, and I don't want you to use me as an excuse to your political platform. They got him fired, you know, and then the whole firing things and calling people's works started, and it grew and grew. But that just intensified the Gamergate movement, that for the first time was a group of people. It was not just a single person. It was not just me as a moderator somewhere in some political forum somewhere in the internet space. It was a group of people who were starting to gather up, team up, no leadership, pure anarchism, actually. That's actually the goals of anarchism. No leaders, just the people pushing forward for something constructive. And they managed to pull it through. And then I thought, oh my God, that's the breakthrough. That's the turning spot. As silly as it is because of games, you know, but this is really a turning point after all I've seen, being fired myself, you know, having to leave university. Like, this is what I thought, man, this is it. From now on, you know, the shit really hit the fan. Things are going to start changing. But I don't know. I don't know. The future is always uncertain.
Well,
what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I just want to add that you often compare the far right and the far left. I don't think it's a complete apple to oranges comparison. Excuse me. I don't think it's a complete apple to apples comparison.
Well, just for a brief introduction, Sam, do you identify more with the right than the left?
Yes, I identify more with the right. From my experience, anecdotally, most people who are right-wing are, especially when they join the far right, it's usually a reaction against the far left, whether it's feminism, sexual liberalism, or totalitarianism, or pushing the gay agenda down people's throats, or multiculturalism, and like the whole white guilt campaign.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people who are on the far right would normally be people who just want to live a normal life, who just want to have a decent job with a nice wife and kids, and they can't have that anymore because of like so many social changes that have been pushed by the radical left that is destroying the nuclear family, that's destroying homogeneity, destroying social unity.
What you're saying is a lot of these people are people who in the past would have just been kind of pretty much a centrist, but they're joining the far right as a reaction to a lot of the changes that are happening.
Yeah, that's what I feel.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a fair way to put it. I think it's pretty much accurate, because I by following those things, I also followed the whole development of the right in the late decades. You know, how people are actually trying to, you know, to get away from this cannibalistic left and doing natural things. You know, I just see a problem starting to emerge in the right when people like Rams Paul, who is all, I believe he represents all those values that you just exposed, right? Saying, oh, I don't have anything to do with those guys anymore. You know, I think it's a great warning about what might be going on. Now, I'm not so much into contact with the alt-right, but when I see people like him jumping out of the alt-right, and he's a guy that dares a lot, saying a lot of stuff, because he probably, like me, reached the point of no return. You know, we went through the depression trying to understand, why the hell am I doing something wrong? Am I really doing something wrong? And then suddenly you realize that, no, we are not doing anything wrong. So you just push the fuck you button and you start speaking loud, right? But if even he is saying that, I think it's eye-opening. And one of the reasons also I didn't join something like the alt-right. I was talking with people from the alt-right, and their ideas seem to be pretty right, like family values. I respect that. I have a family myself. I completely understand how necessary and how I have been fooled by the left into believing that, oh, don't have children, they're only trouble. That, no, they bring you back to life. You have a completely different inner joy with children around you, with their laughter, with their joy, with their need for your attention, than just being this cool, lonely sod, constantly searching for female companionship, you know, that never ends. I mean, like a Greek hell. If you see the definition of Greek hell, it's a guy repeating the same task again and again and again.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like what pickup artists do. Like, they go to the clubs every Friday and Saturday night to pick up a different 21-year-old.
Exactly. And that's, like, if you are like that, fair enough. Like, if this is, I even at some point, I think 5 years ago or something, I made like a definition of human types, different types of human, based on all those Huxley thing of the alpha, beta, gamma, delta, and epsilon, you know. And I concluded that the gamma is that guy that goes out and likes to, you know, he's the soldier, he's the foot soldier, the operational level, you know. But there are other levels, and I elaborated a bit. I need to put it in the web, actually, again. I had a website. I had a YouTube channel. I removed it. It had a lot of stuff there, but I removed it because the time was gone for what I was pushing forward. So I left. I did it a lot. Ideas also become obsolete. They also cease to serve a purpose. So I'm constantly, like, I'm kind of more like water in that sense. Like, I'm fluid, more than stable. But I understand what you're saying, and I agree with you. And you're completely right. The alt-right started like this. But when Rand Paul are jumping out of that boat, there might be something there that one should be careful with. Don't you think?
Yeah. Well, with the alt-right, one of their big issues seems to be with massive immigration. But I don't really see why that has to be a right-wing issue. You can be a centrist or even a liberal and criticize immigration levels. Or there should be a healthy debate. Even if you're not saying you're going to be totally anti-immigration, I think it should be an issue that should be discussed openly. Like, what should be the ideal level of immigration? As opposed to, the thing is, the people on the left will say that it's a that is just racist to talk about, and then that ends up giving the kind of the far right the kind of monopoly on the opposition side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There is like a to continue on that point that like there needs to be there needs to be a honest discussion of human biodiversity on both the left and the right and the center, you know, where we honestly discuss the differences between people biologically, culturally, and genetically. So we could decide, like, if we want to have mass immigration, a multicultural society, like, we need to look at different cultures to decide, like, which cultures are compatible and which aren't.
Exactly. It's not everything is the same thing.
Yeah.
No, they are very different. They are very different. Like, I worked with immigrants. I work here in Denmark. I worked with them, and man, I remember there was this mother. She wanted me to marry one of her daughters. Funny story, but I've been really, like, I lived in their neighborhoods. They are nice usually, but they have, it's a pity because there is this former Muslim that lives in Denmark. He's a famous Danish politician. God, his name fails me, but his book has not been translated. He explains all the aspects of the Muslim culture, for instance. The name of the book is called Honor and Shame. And according to him, this culture, they are completely based on the concept of honor and shame. And that's basically what moves them. And it's funny because we are not moving by honor and shame. We find today those concepts somehow relevant, but at the end of the day, it's not so important as long as, right? There is a balance in our mindset. For them, no. For them, this is everything. You're bringing the family to shame. It's not just bullshit. They really believe it. You know, they are beaten into submission from when they are kids to believe that they have to honor their family. Whatever that means for them, it's explained in that book. When I can, Robert, I'm going to send you the name of the politician, so you can look at it because it's very interesting. It explains the whole thing, you know, because we don't really understand where they are coming from, what is their angle, you know. But yes, it needs a debate. But I believe that you will only have a debate proper in the center, because I try to debate with the alt-right about certain things. Like, I think for now, amongst other things, we should give a break to immigration. It should stop for a while because things are getting out of control. I've been myself attacked in the street. You know, they came and they punched my girlfriend in the face, and they started rocking our baby wagon with our baby inside. You know, they think they own everything around here. It's crazy. And I've seen them do crazy shit to old people in Denmark. Like, I think it's not being done correctly. But you can't say that to the left. And when I try to talk about some other topics, completely irrelevant. I was born in Brazil. I'm Danish. My father is Danish and all that. But I was born in Brazil. Whenever I make a point that is somehow challenging to some of the people, not all, but some of the, I have people from the alt-right in my list of friends, even in Facebook. But the debate stops there. Whenever I make a point that is challenging to what they believe in, oh, you are Brazilian. You are Brazilian. Hue, hue. You are Brazilian. You're Brazilian, you're from Brazil, you're not even European, you are from Brazil. I said, yeah, Richard Dawkins, he was born in Africa. You know, so is he the typical Nubian type? I don't think he is. You know, no, but you are Brazilian, you're from Brazil, you are not European, you are not you, you are a sham. And, you know, they start attacking the personal. Of course, I know they lost their point, but, you know, they go with it. So you cannot, believe me, you cannot have a proper debate right now with the alt-right if you have any aspect, personal aspect, that they do not, or they are fighting against, or they do not fully agree with. You understand? So yeah. The fact that I was born in Brazil overrules any common sense, any logic, any fact, any point, anything. Like, I'm not going to get into personal family details to show how pure European I might be, because this is utterly ridiculous. But, you know, it overrules. The debate stops there. In the same fashion as similar to if I challenge certain aspects of the radical left, I'm currently discussing a lot with anarchists because I happen to be one. I'm very keen to the movement. It was like since I was 12, you know, I have several friends into the movement. I consider myself as well as an anarchist. Now, what kind of anarchism? You understand? But when I try to talk about anarchism with today's anarchists, it's the funniest thing. Half of them completely agree with what I say, but there is this communist group inside, and they are clearly communist. How do I know? Criticize Marx. Marx, who has persecuted anarchists, who hated Bakunin and all that, criticize him, and they will flip, you understand? So they are not anarchists, but they are LARPing. They are playing the role because subversion and all that. I think you are familiar with Yuri Bezmenov.
What do you think about these different European political parties, like, say, a politician like Marine Le Pen? The media describes her as a far right, but I was looking over her political platform, and on a lot of issues, she's most known for her issues on immigration and criticizing Islam, but on issues other than that, I would say she's almost fairly socialist on many issues. She's pro-environment. Do you see those kind of parties as, do they have any relation to an alt-center, or do you view them as more part of the far right?
That's the problem, you know. Again, the media, although it's dying, it's still, as I see it, as you put, it's still very influent. It's still very influent. No matter how much we ridicule them in the web, they still are relevant to decision in the political sphere. And it's the whole thing with the skinheads, you know, happening again. All the media really needs to do is to flip a coin and say, okay, you're it. And most people that don't care, it's like in sociopathy, if that makes any sense. A sociopath, they count in the apathy of other people when they are harming someone. They count in the fact that other people don't want to have anything to do with it. So Le Pen, I believe she is, because her father was very into it, as far as I remember. Like, he was very nationalistic. He wanted to stop the whole thing. I might be wrong. It's a long time ago. But I think Le Pen, she is really trying. I think she's trying. I'm not so sure about Geert Wilders. I find the fact that he colors his hair blonde a bit disturbing for a man. Sure, do whatever you want, but that indicates he might have some kind of, he thinks he's not white enough or something there, like some trouble.
Oh, yeah, like I think I think he does have Indonesian ancestry, so maybe he's trying to dye his hair blonde to, like, prove his credentials or something.
Yeah, and that's a bad idea. We have to be what we have to be, you know, and because...
Or it may be because he's metrosexual.
Ah, he is. That ugly thing. Wow.
Well, maybe the ugly guys are trying to overcompensate for it.
Yeah, like Milo.
Yeah. Actually, Milo isn't that bad looking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. You know, like for a gay guy, he might be all right. Like, he surely takes care of himself. He looks better than Geert Wilders. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
No, just now I'm just having visual.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny.
Well, there's this other political party in Italy called the Five Star Movement. And
I don't know much about them.
I'm not an expert on them, but they're trying to kind of bring together different factions of the dissident left and the dissident right and libertarianism. And I'm really fascinated by them, but I've also heard some people say because they're trying to bring... They did elect a mayor of Rome, I know, but because they're trying to bring again all the... together all these different diverse factions, that can cause kind of splintering too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, because I don't know much about them, so I don't think I can say anything. I think that's the point, but I think that's what people should push towards. And this is why I believe that the alt-center is currently relevant, because it seems to be... people, we have said it several times, but it seems to be like we just want to talk about things without being trashed right from the, you know, whenever we say something that triggers someone, you know. This needs to stop. And I think that should be, if there should be any flag for the alt-center, that should be the flag. Like, I developed the concept of the gray pill some months ago, you know? You know about the gray pill?
Oh, the gray pill, as opposed to the red pill.
Yeah, I did it half for fun, but this is how good ideas tend to start. You know, that the idea would be to remain neutral as much as you possibly can, because by remaining neutral... it's a way not only to get yourself rested mentally, but also to make a stand against going too far. You understand what I mean? So it's not remaining apathic to what is happening around us. No, we have to be aware, but we have to remain neutral to allow a debate, to allow the balance, to allow people to be able to speak and not interfere and not bash them to bits just because they happen to have something we don't like about them. And I see that happening. When Top Hats and Champagne, for instance, that is a funny guy, I talked with him a couple of times. We seem to like some things in common. And I'm not talking about drugs, never did them, but I have a lot of friends that do them. They say that I probably fell in a cauldron of drugs when I was young because I'm completely crazy. But when I saw him speaking the name alt-center, I thought, okay, this is in. Because people listen to him, you know, because he plays the funny guy. He does the real, like... saying in a way that people can understand, can relate to him. I'm too serious. You know, I cannot pass that message. So, but he can, because he fools around and he plays silly and all that, and people understand, especially the young people. So when someone like him steps in and starts saying, I'm considering, perhaps I should join that, because he too also seemed to have gotten tired of the whole thing, right? So I thought, okay, this is in the right direction. My job here is done, you know.
With the issue of economics, would you say that you're more socialist or more of a capitalist? Or do you think the key is finding the right balance between the public sector and private sector.
Humanity always finds a way. If you want a problem to get solved, remove all the rules, remove all the regulations, and in a couple of years, everything, this is what they did when during the Great Depression in the U.S., when the government realized that they couldn't handle the whole madness that they had caused, what did they do? They stopped interfering, they stopped regulating for, I think, 2.5 years. And when they came back, everybody had kind of, the large majority already had a job. They found a place in society again. Everything had moved back into normality again. So this is the best way, let it go. And the path shall reveal itself. I think it's very important, that sentence. Sounds kitsch, sounds corny, but there's a lot of truth into that. That's a way of solving things. As I said, I am inclined more to the anarchy. So that means I believe that people should decide their own, what to do with the fruit of their labor and all that. I could be completely inclined to that, but I decided to go for the alt center because I also saw, by living here in Denmark, how much it helps to have a welfare system. Although Denmark is capitalistic, it is. They have that Viking that if you if you didn't have some very strong rules here, they would just go plundering and burning and kidnapping people. They are very nice people, very laid back, but my dad is Danish and I'm very embedded in the Danish culture. And I know that
I've been there, but I was really little in 1989. But my grandfather was from there.
Yeah, so I think you have a brief idea of how they can be if you push them far enough. They all have a breaking point, very easy to break.
Swedes have a more of a stereotype for being more uptight. Is there some truth to that?
Yes. The Danes, and this is why I'm currently living in Denmark, the Danes, they are more soft-hearted. They have a word here that is called hygge. At hygge. That doesn't exist in English. And it's something about being laid back, relaxing and enjoying company in just that little word, relaxing, enjoying the company of others and not worrying about anything, basically what hygge means. And this is the core of the society here. While the Swedes, they are more stern and wicked in a way. They have a mean streak. I think they're colder than the Danes. The Danes, they're more warm-hearted than the Swedes. They're more laid back.
We are at the end of the show. I would like to thank Jan Pa for being on. Thanks, Sam Kevorkian.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for your time, Sam.
You're welcome.